Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 149, if you can believe it. I'm Chad Dotson. With me again is one of our good friends, one of the long-time, one of the original writers at Red Leg Nation, and a guy that, with me, we've announced some exciting news this week. Looking forward to talking about it for you guys. It's Chris Garber. How are you today, Chris?
Great, Chad.
Well, that's good. As I said, we announced something this week, and if you hadn't seen that, I'm really going to have to question what you're doing listening to the podcast here. You should have been reading Red Leg Nation every day or following us on Twitter. Chris and I, as it turns out, well, let me start at this place. A few weeks ago, I kind of hinted on two or three episodes, hey, we've got some news we're going to announce at some point, really kind of a tease, and we finally announced it this week. Chris and I have been writing a book, and we actually wrote the book. It's completed, and we've turned it in to our editor, and it's the book's called The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. And I wanted to have Chris on so that we could talk about it. We've talked a little bit in the past. Hey, once we finally announced it, we waited longer than we probably should have to announce it. Maybe, I don't know. But how does it feel to you, Chris, to know that, hey, we got an actual book, we've actually written it now, and now we can talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, we've kind of kept this really close to the vest. I mean, a few of my close friends and family I've told about it, or they kind of wonder where I've been. But it's really exciting to be able to share this project and start talking about it because, you know, I think we're pretty excited about it.
We are, and we put, like you said, disappear for a while. We put a lot of time into it over the last few months, and I do want to get into the origins a little bit, but we did keep it kind of close to the vest, friends and family, very close friends, matter of fact, and family, very few. And maybe some of that, some of the reason why I wasn't too excited to announce it early on was, yeah, let's make sure we get this thing written. Because it turned out to be in some ways, a beast of a project. Anytime you write an actual book, I don't know that anybody can understand. It was difficult at times, wasn't it?
It really was. And, you know, I tend to get lost in the research, and there's so much exciting and interesting material, and I just keep writing and writing and writing. I mean, to me, the hardest part was cutting it back down.
Yeah, that was difficult. We had to, but I guess the thing about it is, you're right, there's so much. We you know, the Reds are a little bit of a laughing stock right now, but man, you look back at the history of this organization, and just we found story after story after story that we wanted to include, and you're right, a bunch of it didn't get in, and we're going to try to share a lot of that at Red Leg Nation over the coming months, but. It was kind of fun to dig in a little bit deeper into Red's history and sort of the way we looked at it. I think you'll agree with this is we were really trying to find a different angle on all these. You know, a lot of people know some of these stories, Big Red Machine stories, things like that. A lot of people know the stories where they think they know them. And our goal was to try to find a different angle or some unique stories that you hadn't heard to put a different spin on it. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm got rose-colored glasses here. But I really think we succeeded on that. We got some interesting stuff in there, I think.
I absolutely agree. The two of us know a lot about Red's history, or at least I thought I did going in.
Right.
And every single chapter in this book is going to have something that we didn't know when we started. And that was kind of our goal, was to bring something new to the hardcore fan, something that you might not know, something, an interesting angle or a different fact. And sometimes it's trivial, and sometimes it's really fundamental. But and we also want to make the book accessible to our kids who are just kind of getting into baseball and just starting to learn about the Reds. And you know, kind of we'll set the stage and give them the basics, but also have some really interesting facts to the people who think they know it all already.
Yeah, I think that's the part that I'm going to end up being the proudest of, maybe in some ways, about this book, is that I think we did sort of navigate those waters and thread that needle, to use as many cliches as I can come up with here, of making a book that's accessible to, you know, the regular fan that maybe isn't as deep into Reds history as you and I have been since we were kids, who just learning some of these stories, or who maybe just aren't up on some of these stories, but while also having some element to each of these chapters. I really think there's something in each of these chapters that even the hardcore Reds fan is going to say, oh, I didn't know that, or oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. And I really do feel like we were able to accomplish that. I guess we'll have to let the readers tell us when it finally comes out. But I think that's going to be, I hope. That was our goal, and I feel good about it. I hope that the readers of the book, if there are any readers, I hope that they are able to see that we were able to accomplish that, because it makes it a little different than other Reds books on the market, I think. And I think it's a unique product, and I'm proud of it. I'm just proud of it.
I am too. Hopefully some other people will agree and some people will buy it and read it from the local library or whatever. But, I think it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of people, I may have not have told everybody I was writing a book, but I have been pestering people like crazy with stories from the 1940 Reds or the 1918 Reds and all these different years past and stories that I never knew. And, just maybe we'll see how the writing goes, but just in the telling, the stories are pretty interesting, and everyone's, been found it interesting that right. There was once a game where a Reds guy and a Cubs guy both threw no-hitters for 9 innings, and Jim Thorpe was on the Reds, and a lot of stuff I never knew.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. We went into it thinking, hey, can we find new stuff that we didn't know? And, not that we are the be-all and end-all of Reds historians, but I felt like every chapter there's something in there that I didn't know going into this project, and so I thought that was a pretty good barometer. Now, it is going to be coming out. We don't have a specific publication date just yet, but it's going to be around opening day next year, spring 2017, so we got a little while before it comes out, and we got some more work maybe to do on it, but we have finished the hardest part of the book. And I thought it'd be good, Chris, and I think you agree with this, to maybe talk about the genesis of this project, because it's not a thing where a few months ago we decided we were going to start writing a book, was it?
No, not at all. And I may not exactly, I don't remember whose idea it was, to be honest with you.
I don't either, because it's been so long.
Well, yeah, it's been, was it 2005 or 2006?
I could go back and get the actual answer to that. I might need to do that before we go on our big, huge, nationwide book signing tour.
Yeah. Fallon's going to want to know that.
Right, yes. He'll want that information.
Yeah. So, back in 2005, 2006, we had just started Red Leg Nation, and I was in San Diego. You were where you are. But,
right, yeah. Virginia.
Our lives were much different back then.
Yes.
And we had the idea to write a book about the 50 greatest games in Reds history. And we put together a couple sample chapters, which I thought were pretty great, and a proposal, and shopped it around a little bit. And I mean, we got some interest, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just never anything where we finally got someone agreeing to publish it.
Yeah.
But it was a good idea. I thought, I still do think it was a good idea.
Yeah, it was a good idea. And every, I don't know, 3 or 4 years we'd say, hey, whatever happened to that? Should we do that? Something about that? And thankfully you kind of got us back on track, what, about probably almost exactly a year ago, maybe a little bit longer?
Yeah, it was last winter, I think. It was a little bit less than a year, but almost. And that project, the title of it was The 50 Greatest Games in Reds History Plus 5 to Forget, I think, if you remember.
That's right, yeah.
And I still think we had a pretty good idea there. But, yeah, about a little less than a year ago, I talked to you and said, hey, we've been talking about this thing forever. Red Leg Nation is going stronger than ever, and maybe the timing's right to ship that back out and see if we get any interest. And lo and behold, we had, like you said, we'd had some interest before, but at this point we started to get some serious interest, didn't we, in it? I don't know about you, but it kind of surprised me a little bit how serious it got pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why I'll speak for myself. That's why I haven't talked about it a ton, is because I didn't want to jinx anything.
That's exactly right.
I'm not an author. I'm a lawyer and a dad and a suburban guy. I mean, I never really thought I'd be having a book in a bookstore, so I didn't wanted to wait till everything was done and signed and sealed and delivered before we really started talking about it. So,
yeah, and we didn't really talk about why we weren't going to talk about it, but it's funny to hear you say that because that was my deal. You know, we talked about it forever, but we're just a couple of dumb guys who write about baseball on the internet, you know, and we've had fun over the years doing that. But I wanted to make sure this was actually going to happen. And at this point, I guess we might be embarrassed if something happens and it blows up in our face at this point. But I don't know that we're going to get much more confident that it's
No, I think it's going to happen. I mean, the publisher retweeted you the other day, so I think we're good.
Yeah, the publisher retweeted with a comment that can't wait for this book. Going to be a good one or something like that, you know. So it's fingers crossed. But now this book that we actually wrote is a little different. Than the project that you and I had conceived way back when, in the mid, I don't know what you call it, 2005, 2006, whenever.
I just call that the Adam Dunn era.
Back in the mid Eric Milton days.
Yeah, the mid Miltons.
The mid Miltons, and maybe I'll let you address the ways that it's different and how it evolved to where it is. It's not extremely different, but it is different.
Yeah, so we're our publisher's Triumph Books, and they're a sports publishing house that has a lot of great books that I encourage anybody to check them out. And one of their books is the, for example, is the 100 Things Reds Fans Should Do Before They Die by our friend Joel Lockups.
Right.
And that was a series that they published with a lot of different teams, versions of different teams. And this new series, the Big 50, they have, I think, two out in baseball and a couple others in football that they're publishing. Now, they're going to publish a lot of different books for a lot of different teams, I assume, if they're successful. And it's about the Big 50. It's not just games. It's games, it's moments, it's men, it's whatever are the biggest 50 things, I guess you'd say, or that in the Reds' history.
Right.
So it was a little bit different for us. And we had focused real narrowly originally. Our thought was, let's focus narrowly on games and use the games as a way to get into the men and the moments and the trends and the events. But this, the Triumph's format is just, it's almost a little more open for us. So rather than talking about a specific day in 1972 and using that as an avenue to talk about Sparky Anderson, now we'll just talk about Sparky Anderson in his own chapter.
Yeah, and we kind of actually flipped it a little bit. In some instances, there were certain, we were going to use the original concept, as you said, as a way to, as a jumping off point to discuss various things that we felt like were important in Reds history or maybe underserved in terms of general knowledge. And in some of these chapters now, like with Sparky Anderson, for example, or let's say Johnny Bench. Let's use him for an example, because one of the games in our original concept was his last game where he hit the big home run on Johnny Bench Day. Not his last game, but his last home run on Johnny Bench night. And instead of really using that game to sort of jump off and talk about Johnny Bench, we kind of flipped it the other way. The chapter is about Johnny Bench, but we delved into that game, if that makes sense, what I'm saying. I'm not sure that it does now that I'm saying it, but we still focused on that game, but we expanded it a little bit. It was a little more open and not as narrow of a focus. I still think our old concept would have worked very well as a book project, but I think the way we approach this one as well, there's a good mix of games. There are some people that didn't really fit, like Barry Larkin. You're gonna pick one game of Barry Larkin's career to be able to talk about Barry Larkin? No, but I don't think we did we?
No, we didn't.
There are too many. But a lot of guys like Johnny Bench, you could use that game. So it was a pretty good hybrid of our original concept along with what Triumph wanted. And I think it worked. We came up with 50 men and moments, mostly moments, I think. But when there weren't moments that would help us talk about the men we wanted to talk about, we devote a chapter to the men. And, I don't know. I think it ended up working.
Yeah, I think so. Again, I'm a little biased, but I love the book. I'm in love with it. And I hope a lot of other people will, too.
I agree. Although at the end we were,
at the end I was ready to divorce it.
Right,
but
yeah.
We had so much great material, and I think this is the sign of a great book: is we cut a lot of great stuff out of at least our first draft that we turned in. So it's possible our editor looks back and says, "Where's all the good stuff?" and wants to put it back in. But I think that's, like I said, I think that's a sign of a really good book when the stuff that goes on the cutting room floor is interesting and well done and worthy of being in the book. It just can't fit.
Yeah,
I think we succeeded.
I agree, and it really hurt, didn't it? Cutting some of that stuff. It was painful.
It did. Then I got numb.
Right. Yeah. It was. Yeah. At some point, you're like, all right, well, we've cut all this other good stuff. Let's make this as tight a narrative as we can, and the most interesting book within the parameters that we've got. And I'm proud of it. I don't know. It's a little bit of an unknown still because this is our first go at this. But I do think that if there's someone looking for sort of a general history of the Cincinnati Reds, and a new fan maybe, you can go and read. There's not really been a definitive history necessarily of the entire organization from beginning to end. I think this is a really good place to start for that fan.
I think so too. Yeah, because what this book's going to do. Sorry, this book's going to give you a taste of everything. I think of every era, of just about every major character, and then you'll be able to go dig in deep, which is kind of what we did. Entire books on the 1940 Reds. There's an entire book on the 1990 Reds. There's more than one. So whatever, when you read this thing, you're going to get a taste. You're not just going to get the basics, the major battles and the presidents. You're going to get a flavor for what it was like at the time, what the people were like. And then you can, dig in deep and find the part of Reds history you think is the most interesting and go deeper on it.
Yeah, because, I don't think what we've provided in any way is a surface view of each of those eras or anything. I think we've gone pretty deep while making it as readable as possible. But for someone who's just learning or maybe doesn't know much before, the Big Red Machine, there's a good bit in here. I mean, there's a lot of Big Red Machine. Don't get me wrong. If you're a Big Red Machine guy, as you can attest, there's plenty of Big Red Machine in here. But there's also a lot of other stuff, Johnny Vandermeer's double no hitters. You think you know about that? Well, I guarantee there's something here you didn't know. And for those of you who don't know, it's going to be a good introduction to that. Guys like the 1961 Reds, the Ragamuffin Reds, that won the pennant and surprised everyone. That's a fun story. Guys like Frank Robinson and Veda Pinson and Gene Freese, and it's a fun team to look at. And if you don't have any knowledge of that team, this is a good introduction. And then you go read the book later that's been written about him. So I think that you're going to find something no matter what kind of Reds fan you are. We just talked about if you're a sort of a new fan, but I just can't imagine, and maybe Greg Rhodes, the Reds historian, maybe he might not find anything in there that he didn't know ahead of time. But I'm telling you, I think even if you're one of these guys that watches every Reds game and talks about them on Twitter and at Red Leg Nation in the comments, we sort of harp on this, but I do think you're going to find something in every single chapter, or at least 49 out of the 50 chapters. How about that?
I totally agree. I honestly was trying to find stuff that would stump Greg Rhodes and John Arardi and some of the really exceptional Reds historians. I would love it if they found something new in this book. I don't know if they will, but everybody else will.
Yeah, exactly. So, and let's just talk for a moment, if we could, about the amount of research that went into this, because that's what we're really getting at. That's why we were able to find a story or a nugget, at least in every chapter, multiple nuggets in pretty much every chapter that we were like, huh, how about that?
Yeah.
We dug through Cincinnati Enquirer archives. I mean, I'm just that. Those Enquirer archives, my brain is kind of fried from looking at that old newsprint. I feel like I've got newsprint on the brain.
It's amazing. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we've talked about. This book, we couldn't have done this book 10 years ago, even though we wanted to.
No,
it would
right.
have been a lot harder.
Oh, absolutely.
We would have been in the airplane and in the car and up to our elbows in a library for weeks and weeks on end. But now that the full text, full images of all the Enquirer archives are available online, you got to pay a little bit, but it's there. New York Times, Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, Dayton Daily News for some years. I mean, you can get right back to the original source material, and it's not just like you're doing a search. I mean, you can just flip through the paper.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I got caught in so many rabbit holes from scandalous murder in 1938 to a protest in 1972. I'm supposed to be looking for the sports pages, and I'm flipping through the rest of the paper. But anyway, so you can get all this information, and then you just get into books. I mean, my library will order basically any book that's ever been printed, and there have been a lot of great baseball books printed and books about the Reds. I don't know. How many do I have in the bibliography? About 50?
Yeah, I started to pull it up. Our bibliography is crazy. Yeah, I mean, just all the books. In addition to the newspaper. And I was like you with the newspaper. How many research hours we wasted just reading these old newspapers, because it was fascinating to see this. Yeah, I'm looking back at 1869 newspapers for the Reds' first game, and I'm thinking, man, this is insane. You know, yeah. Forgetting the baseball, I went down those rabbit holes as well. But you're right. We should probably count it up. Again, before we go on the Tonight Show, we'll count that up.
Yeah, they're sticklers for that.
How many books? But yeah, just every book we could find that could contribute anything here, and sort of take all these source materials, put them together, and you know, see if we can put something together that's different than anything else we've seen out there. And there are a lot of great Reds books, like you said, but I really honestly feel like this one's different. Maybe it's just because I'm so close to the project. I don't know, but I really feel like it's different. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different. It's a weird combination. It's hard to explain this, but the book is really broad and really deep.
Yeah,
because it's completely unlimited. We start in 1869, and spoiler, there's a game from 2016 in the book.
Yeah,
it's not just a highlights of Reds history. I think in each instance, we pick and choose places that are interesting and can also shed light on the era that they're in, but are kind of a contained story and interesting in themselves. So that was, we really didn't want to make it the high level, just summary of Reds history in 300 pages. Cause I don't think that does anybody any good.
Right. To just repeat what's been said out there, before. And I think what you said there, I think you're right. It's just sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. It's different. It's good. I think you make me regret putting a 2016 game in when you mention it. I start thinking about 2016. Oh gosh, we really, we won't give a spoiler out on that one, but I promise you it works within the context of the greatest men and moments in the history of the Reds. And you might be able to guess, what we're talking about, on that. But yeah, that's a great way to put it. 1869 to 2016, it does as under this format as good as you can do, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, that was the first conversation and one of the first questions I think that Triumph had for us, because the two books that came out this year were the Blue Jays, who started in 1977, so they have a really great, fun history, but they're dealing with less than 40 years of it. And the other is the Giants, and that book was specifically limited to the San Francisco Giants. So that is, what, 58 years, 57 years worth of history?
Right, yeah, when they moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, so we're looking at basically 3-4 times as much time to cover in the same amount of chapters.
And that literally was the first conversation we had with our editor, wasn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, they want to sell books, and I'm sure that no one's surprised that there's a bigger market for books about people who are alive and people have seen and people you're familiar with, rather than a bunch of people in black and white photographs from long, long ago. But I think we've really done a great job of picking and choosing the most exciting, interesting, relatable stuff from the kind of olden days of Reds history.
Yeah, the best stuff, the most interesting stuff, and we're really patting ourselves on the back a lot here today, guys.
it's a weird conversation, isn't
it's
it?
It's very strange.
No, we're great. How great are we?
We're the best yeah, writers absolutely. You've ever seen.
Probably the best. This is probably going to be the best book you'll ever buy.
Yeah, not probably. I mean, I think that's almost a guarantee here. no, but I do think that if you're dedicated enough to listen to a podcast, I guarantee this is going to be up your alley. And I think it's going to be up the alley of a lot of your friends and family, and I hope I hope you all will get behind it. I'm excited.
It's going to be a great product. Triumph is even, you know, setting aside the writing, Triumph is a great publisher. It's going to be a first-class book. They've committed to filling this book with full-color photographs. So it's going to be a great product. Even if you don't like the writing, it's going to be a great product, and you're going to be impressed by how it looks and how it's put together.
Yeah, and you know, anybody can write a book and in some ways publish it these days. And I'm not it's not to put off on anyone that self-publishes or whatever, but that's kind of what I'm really looking forward to, getting the actual product in my hands. Because you're right, they do. Triumph puts out a great product just in terms of the actual quality of it. And I'm looking forward to getting it in my hands, looking forward to going into a bookstore and seeing your name on a book. I'll be like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that'll be really a thrill for you.
Yeah, it will be a thrill for me and for everyone else, I'm sure. It's the real deal. I don't know. We've said it 100 times. I'm excited. Well, yeah, I'm really excited for people to get their hands on it and to tell us what they think.
I want to just send it out. I'm sure Triumph won't be happy, no. But I just kind of want to just like email it to anybody who wants to read it right now.
Let's just publish it at Relignation. You want to?
Just a long, 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 long blog post.
One big post.
Just scroll. Keep scrolling.
Yeah. Oh well, maybe we won't do that. But like we said earlier, we're trying to formulate a little bit of a plan where we can publish some of the greatest hits that didn't make it, the cutting room floor, over the next few months, and some things we can do to maybe some excerpts from the actual book and things to give you an idea of what we were going for. And it's going to be a fun few months.
Yeah, I think so. And people are going to know what they're getting before they put down their $78 or whatever it's going to cost.
Good grief. It better not cost $78.
No, it's not. We're not using university textbook pricing.
No, I don't think so. Although someday this book might be taught in their finest university.
That could be. Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
Kind of your finest university.
Exactly.
No, but whatever. We're going to, you know, you're going to know what you're getting, and I think it's going to be worth the money.
Yeah, I do too. And so obviously, check out Relignation and all winter long, and hopefully at the beginning of the season next year, as we get closer to opening day, I'm hoping we're all going to be a little more excited about the product the Reds might be able to put on the field next year. And I hope that we have a moment during the 2017 season where we say, oh man, I wish we could have put this in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Volume 2.
There you go. The Big 50, Volume 2, Electric Boogaloo. I like it. What about this 2017 team? If we could just transition away from the book for a moment, because I do want to talk about our Red Legs that we, for whatever reason, keep watching with about 10 games, less than a dozen games remaining anyway. And in some ways, I'll say this. All this research we've done and as just deep as we've gotten into Reds history, in some ways it has made me, I'm not sure what the right word is here, but it's made me more disappointed in the current product. But in other ways, for example, the 1961 team, and we see, or the 1919 team, or the 1939 and 40 teams really struggled right before then, and you could see the path to competitiveness, for lack of a better term. And so that's, if I'm trying to squint my eyes and be excited for the next good Reds team, I could say, hey, some of these other teams were bad, and then they were good. Maybe that'll be us. That's probably not the way to look at the 2017 Reds. Let's talk about the 2016. But they're closer, though, aren't they, to being a good team than they were in April?
I think so, if you don't count this week, which I'm not going to.
Oh, the Cubs.
The Cubs. See, I'm married to a Cubs fan, so I had no choice but to watch this week's games.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they've certainly got some interesting pieces. They've got some interesting holes, and they've got some of their interesting pieces are blocked, unfortunately, by other players. So they've got so many decisions to make this offseason, and I don't know what they can do with it. I mean, what do you do with a guy like Brandon Phillips? Can they do anything? Is Brandon Phillips here for the duration?
They can do something. I think the question is going to be whether they're willing to make the tough call here. Some of that's going to depend on what they think of Dilson Herrera, who's supposedly the second baseman in waiting, the kid they got from the Mets in exchange for Jay Bruce. Poor Jay, rest in peace. But if he's ready, then I'm not sure they've got any. Well, I say that. I start to say that they don't have any choice, but I would have said, I did say that, I think, around the All-Star game this year about giving his spot to Jose Peraza. So my fear is that they are not going to have the stomach for it, and we're going to see Brandon Phillips. Now, I do think they're going to try to trade him, and he may have a little more trade value now, and he may be willing to accept a trade. Now, I don't know, but I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for that, and I'm really afraid that come opening day, Brandon Phillips is your starting second baseman, and as much good as Brandon Phillips has done for the Reds over the years, to me, that's an indication that they're not 100% serious about this rebuild or about doing it as quickly as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I agree. I mean, I'm not going to rip Brandon Phillips as a player in it for his career or even today. I mean, he's not a bad baseball player,
no.
But he's not the kind of guy you start at second base if you're rebuilding.
Nice. Going to be a 36-year-old second baseman next year, and I'm not sure how that helps the next good Reds team to have him starting.
I think that's a good question for Brian Price. How does that help the Reds win?
How does that help the Reds? I don't want to hear his 77 F-bomb response to that. I think that I think we're going to know a lot more. I do think the Reds have made progress, and I think we do know more now than we did in April. And I think we've learned something about some of the young pitching, both in the minor leagues and on the big league level. I think that we've learned things about Eugenio Suarez, and we've learned things about Jose Peraza, and we've learned that Adam Duvall and Scott Schebler can be at least a piece on the next good team, whether a starter or a bench guy, but some talent there. So I think we've learned something. I think that when we get to opening day next year, though, is Zach Cozart still here? And I'm a Zach Cozart fan. He's had a good sort of an underrated Reds career. And is Brandon Phillips here? Those are going to be my litmus test. If those two guys are your two starting middle infielders on opening day, then that's fine. I like those guys. But I think you make a very good case that they're not serious about trying to be competitive as quickly as possible. I think maybe Dilson Herrera is not the guy, but he's an awfully good prospect. He's got big league time. He'll be 23 next year, and it's time to give him a shot. Him and Peraza need to be the middle infield.
I'm sold.
Yeah, what about Jesse Winker? We he's had a pretty good season. I don't know if they'll bring him up on opening day, but if he's not up after whatever his Super 2 deadline is, after a month or two, I think that's what we'll learn next year. Next year has to be the year they go all in on the guys that they hope can be, really should have been this year, that they hope can be a part of the next good Reds team. I don't know why in a lost season like this you wouldn't go ahead and do it this year, but there's, I guess, unique. We're dealing with human beings in Cozart and Phillips. So,
Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, it is, though, it's easy for us to say it sitting here, but there is kind of a question of how bad do you want to do this and how serious are you about it?
And I don't think either of us are saying that Herrera or Peraza are the second coming, that those guys are going to be the guys. But
No, but you're just not going to know.
Yeah, we've got to find out.
You're not going to know one of the things I learned in researching the book was how many at-bats Willie Green got for the Reds back in the mid-90s.
Right.
And they gave that guy every shot to prove that he could hit 35 home runs and play third base in the major leagues. And eventually, when they traded him away, they knew that they didn't think that he could, and he couldn't.
And Peraza, if it hadn't have been for an injury or two, for Cozart being sort of unhealthy at the end of the year and for Billy Hamilton getting hurt so he got a chance in center field, I don't know that we'd know about Jose Peraza now. And I still don't know that we know for sure, but he looks an awful lot like the type of guy that can be a big league shortstop for a few years. Herrera, who knows? Herrera should have been playing. Of course, now he had some injuries, so we can't really pin all that on the Reds, but that's a guy I would love to see playing second base for the Reds for the last 2 months of this season, just to see.
Why'd you trade for him then?
Right. Yeah. Why'd you give up Jim Bruce?
Why'd you trade? Yeah. It's just a strange thing, and I don't know if we're ever going to get a real answer for it. But
like we always say, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't know. We have imperfect information.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it's going to be a weird team, though. I mean, I think they've obviously acquired a lot of talent, but it does seem to all fit a kind of similar mold in the same positions, the same kind of players, and it's you know, are they going to build a team that looks like the 19, you know, early 80s Cardinals, where they've got a ton of guys who hit a lot of doubles and put the ball in contact, you know, put the ball in play, and they're just not going to have home run hitters on the team?
I think you can make the argument that that's the direction they're leaning.
That might work. I don't know that works in Great American Ballpark
no,
in
me either.
2017.
Riverfront Stadium, 1974, maybe.
It might have, and you know that again. I am seeing everything in terms of what we learned from putting together the book and how Bob Housem retooled the Reds once they moved into Riverfront to add speed and defense and let go of some guys like Lee May who had a ton of power.
Yeah, play to your ballpark a little bit, and I hope that what we're seeing is like that 1961 team. Like I said, you know, they brought in a bunch of young guys. They got rid of some guys that were popular.
And good players.
Good players. Woody Woodward was an all-star. Was it Woody Woodward?
The guy that owned the pizzeria.
The guy that owned the pizzeria that we cut out of the book.
Roy McMillan,
thank you. Yeah, Woody Woodward was later in the 60s. Roy McMillan was an all-star, you know. They dealt him away. Joe Nuxhall was a little... on the outs with Reds fans at that time, if anybody can ever believe that Joe Nuxhall was ever on the outs with Reds fans. But he'd been there for a bunch of years, more than a decade, and they got rid of him. They got rid of a bunch of guys and brought in some young guys, and then they filled in with a couple of veterans, got like Gene Freese at third base. And, of course, they had – but then again, I don't know that the 2017 Reds are going to have a Frank Robinson or a Veda Pinson, are they?
Yeah, I don't know if they got a 25-year-old Hall of Famer and a 22-year-old almost Hall of Famer.
We got Votto.
Votto.
But,
that's good.
Yeah, we probably need a – all right. Well, that theory just out
there. Is Jim O'Toole walking through that door?
Jim O'Toole is not – I don't know, maybe. Who knows? Let me ask you this about next year's team. Let's say you're in charge of the Reds. What do you do with in the spring? And I think I know your answer, and it may not even be interesting, but what do you do with Michael Lorenzen and Roselli Iglesias?
Oh, those guys are in the starting rotation in spring training until it doesn't work out. I don't have the MRIs and the doctor's reports or whatever they've got on Iglesias, but if a guy's got great stuff and he's capable of throwing six innings, then that's what he's doing for my team.
Yeah, those two guys, in my opinion, are two of the maybe probably four best arms that I've seen in this Reds organization. I think Iglesias is the best pitcher in the organization. That's my opinion, just in terms of stuff and ability. But, again, don't know about his shoulder. Will it hold up? Who knows? But those guys have to start. But I still think – I know everyone's down on Robert Stevenson and everyone's down on Cody Reed, the big pitching prospects. I'm not. You know, they're kids.
This is what they do. I mean, that's one thing we learned this year is, you know, young pitchers are inconsistent as can be.
Yeah. And, again, they may not make it. They may just
– They may not. They may not be ever be good, but they're talented.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know yet.
I'd rather watch them than watch Alfredo Simon.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, goodness gracious, yes. Yeah, and I think that maybe next year we'll be rid of, hopefully, the Simons and the Ohlendorfs and those guys and really commit to a youth movement other than the middle infield. I don't know. I think it's going to be an interesting team to watch next year. Jason Linden, who writes with us at Red Leg Nation, he's been pretty adamant's not the right word, but vocal about that he thinks next year's team could – be as good as a second place team in the Central. Now, way behind the Cubs, but he thinks if everything goes right, and I guess if everything goes right, they could, but I do see a path to a 500 team even next year. Now, I'm not going to bet the ranch on that, but I can squint my eyes and see that. Can you?
Well, I guess my first question is, where's Devin Mesoraco? Is he catching 130 games?
I don't think he'll ever catch 130 games.
Slugging 570 or something.
Yeah. What if we?
I mean, if that, you know what I mean. If you somehow wave a magic wand and you know Devin Mesoraco from 2013-14 comes back. Or 2014, I guess.
Yeah, 2014.
Yeah, he shows up.
That's a big addition to the lineup.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to see. I can see the Pirates collapsing, and I can see the Cardinals fading faster than we thought. The Cubs aren't going anywhere, though.
No. Although you'll go broke betting on the Cardinals to fade, but I can see it happening. Mesoraco, if we can get 100 games of him at catcher, another 10 or 12 or whatever at DH in the interleague games, and then Tucker Barnhart the rest, that might be the best we can hope for, and it'll certainly be better than what we've had.
Yeah, that would work. That would work. I mean, you got to count on Adam Duvall. Kind of, I don't know if he's going to. You can't say what he was in the first half, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just looking at his season numbers. He's got a .294 on base percentage. That's rough to carry.
And
in the middle of the lineup.
And actually, his on base percentage, his walk percentage, have been better in the second half than before the All Star game. If you can believe it. I'm actually much more bullish on Scott Schebler, 25 years old, and has put up roughly equal numbers on the big league level to Duvall, except for the home run numbers, but roughly equal, and had that monster AAA season. He was a AAA across all AAA. He's one of the three AAA All-Star outfielders by, I think, Baseball America or wherever. Just an amazing season. So, yeah, he's not a guy that I want starting for the next 7 years out there either, but if I had to choose one of those two, as crazy as it sounds, I'm probably picking Schebler over the guy that was an All-Star this year and hit 30-plus home runs.
Well, I think that's right. I think Schebler, when he came over, was probably at least a little bit more highly touted, wasn't he?
He was a top five prospect at one time in the Dodger organization. He had dropped a little bit before the Reds got him, but he had been a top five prospect. But neither one of those guys are going to be – I mean, they are what they are, a little bit of pop, and neither one of them are going to be world beaters, but they could be pieces. Yeah, there's just a lot of questions still before the Reds are competitive again. There's just so many questions.
And this feels, you know what this feels like to me? It feels like the right manager might be able to spin some sort of magic with this bunch of players and this talent. I don't know who that manager is. I have no idea if that manager even works right now. But you look back on guys like Davey Johnson or Jack McKeon in the more recent history, who kind of took a team that wasn't expected to be incredible and got a lot more out of them than they were supposed to.
Let me tell you what I'm hearing. I'm sorry for interrupting you there, but let me tell you what I'm hearing you say is the Reds need to rehire Dusty Baker. That's what I'm taking from what you're saying.
That could be it. I think Dusty Baker might be a really good manager.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thought, and that leads directly into the question of what do we do with the current manager?
Yeah, and I don't know that Brian Price can't be that guy. I just think it's probably unlikely he's going to be that guy now.
Yeah, I think that's
for this team now.
Yeah,
I feel like managerial change does seem to actually have an effect sometimes. Just a different way of looking at things helps people in their job, even if it's not better or worse, just different sometimes is better.
Yeah, we've seen that. We've seen that in the past, certainly, and I think the Jack McKeon is an interesting comparison. With Price, I think Price is. My opinion is he doesn't deserve to be fired, based on what he's been given to work with. On the other hand, I think probably at this point we, even though he's not given the material to work with, we probably have learned that he's at best an average manager. He's probably not the worst, but I don't know that I'm confident he's not the next Joe Maddon either. And so that's an interesting idea. Is a change going to help them take an even bigger step forward than you would expect them to take otherwise? Because I think you would probably agree they should be better next year, just not having to deal with that bullpen and all the injuries to the pitch, assuming that people are healthy, that they had to deal with in the first half this year.
Yeah, I agree. I buy that. And I agree with you what you're saying about Brian Price. It's not that he deserves to be fired, but at some point, too, I mean, like we learned in all that research, a lot of guys got fired that didn't deserve it.
Davey Johnson, you just mentioned, yeah.
Dave Bristol didn't deserve to be fired when they hired Sparky Anderson, but it was a great move.
Yeah, it worked out okay. So I don't know what's going to happen with Price. I do think that unless I can find that guy that I really have 100%, not 100%, but the guy that I believe can be the guy to navigate the next 2 or 3 years, I'll probably see if he'll buy it on a one-year contract and keep looking for that guy.
But if I think so. Yeah, it's interesting. You don't get that like you do in other sports. You kind of have this. There's this kind of list floating around of five or six coaches, whether they're an offensive coordinator in football or they're a college basketball coach looking to go to the NBA. And you kind of have these guys who you're like, well, if that guy, we could get him, then it would be great. Baseball doesn't really have that, do they?
No, not really. I mean, the guys I've heard are, what about Searidge, the pitching coach for Pittsburgh? Or I don't know if the Reds will go with the pitching coach again after Brian Price. But,
yeah,
there's really not that logical candidate, the hot hire. You know, every year you hear about a big college basketball job will come open, and there's always the young gun that's the hot commodity. And you really very rarely see something like that in baseball. So are the Reds going to hire a new manager? Okay, maybe, but who's it going to be? I have no clue. If it's going to be Delino DeShields, the manager at AAA, I just assume they keep Price, frankly. But if you can find a guy that's going to be better than Price, and again, we're dealing with imperfect information. If the Reds have more information than we do and they have a guy in mind, I'm willing to buy it, I guess. But I don't know. I'm always worried about getting another Bob Boone or a Jerry Nairn or a Ray Knight as well. So,
or even a guy like Dave Miley, who was remarkably successful managing the Reds minor league system, who developed a ton of talent, who won, and everybody said all the great things, and he guy deserves a shot, and it didn't work out at all when he got the job.
Yeah, he was a guy that was a nice guy, you know, and a guy that I was sort of advocating for. I thought he did deserve a shot at the time, as I recall. And seemed a little bit in over his head, maybe, and just ended up being a little bit of a disaster. Wasn't able to control that clubhouse, and the Reds. You can't blame all that on him. The Reds are pretty awful for every manager they had during that era. But I don't know what to do. That's a tough call, and it'll be really interesting to see what the Reds do on the managerial front. Anything else with this current team that we really need to talk about? Or are we ready to put this season to bed?
I think I'm done. I think I'm done with it.
All right.
I guess I'll say Joey Votto, Joey Votto, Joey Votto.
Yes.
And Billy Hamilton was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously he's an exciting player. He always has been, but he's a real player.
Thank you. Because I was getting ready to say that, and it really, I'm glad that you said it before I got a chance. I've been mocked a little bit for my Billy Hamilton support, but yeah, he's not an MVP, but his season's probably over. His on-base percentage was over .320 at age 25, you know, and showing some sort of an upward arc. And what a fun player to watch. And if he can get on base higher than .320 on-base percentage, he can help this team. And, of course, his defense is second to none. So, yeah, there are some good things about this year, weren't there?
Yeah, this is going to be – I'll tell you what, though. When somebody goes to the 2016 baseball reference page in 30 years and sees Dan Straley was the leader in wins above replacement on this team, they're just going to be so confused. They're going to look at those pictures and say, who is that guy?
Right.
And the guy with a beard.
I never heard of that guy. And in 50 years, when somebody writes the big 100 for the Reds, and they at that point we'll know whether this is a team, it could be a great story. Here, some of the young guys got a chance, and you know, we can see how Joey Votto took this group of ragtag Reds and led them off into the stratosphere over the next 3 or 4 years, or we can just see it as the 2003 Reds who had no hope. So what the narrative, I guess, for this team is still to be written, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yep.
All right. Well, the narrative of the big 50 moments in Reds history has been written, and Chris, I wanted to say to you, I appreciate it's been difficult, but it's been a lot of fun working with you, and I look forward to continuing to work with you to make this the best book possible. But it's been fun, man, and I really appreciate everything. Appreciate your hard work, and I don't appreciate the fact that you're such a good writer. You made me look bad, but I can deal with that.
Well, thank you, and I same back to you, and you made this project happen. So all the credit goes to you for getting it done, for working with the publisher, and for, you know, all the other work you're doing and getting yourself published and showing how good a writer you are, whether it's Cincinnati Magazine or ESPN or everywhere else. So I think that's really the difference between when we pitched this in 2005 and now. So thanks to you.
Well, I think you're giving me a little more credit than I deserve, but I do think that this project would not have been possible if there weren't two of us, since we both work during the day, really working hard to get this thing. I don't think it would be the quality that we were able to achieve if you and I, number one, weren't able to work together so well, but also willing to put in the hours, and I'm proud of it, man. I'm really proud of what we've done.
Yep, I'm excited for everyone to read it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. All right, well, you know, this is Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 149. If you are subscribed to us, thank you. Go to iTunes, leave us a rating, and leave us a review if you have good things to say. If you don't have good things to say, just keep your mouth shut. Tell your friends to subscribe. If you're not subscribed yet, go subscribe to iTunes, or you can also go to the website there at redlegnation.com, and you can subscribe via whatever your podcast device, whatever you use, whichever app. Also go to Red Leg Nation every day to read about the Reds. That's what we do since 2005. We've been writing about the Reds every single day, pretty much. And even when they're bad, we still figure out something fun to write about. You can follow us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter. Follow Chris at cgarber8 on Twitter. Follow me if you want to. I don't know why you would. At Dotson C, D-O-T-S-O-N-C. Chris, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, sir.
All right. For Chris Garber, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everybody.
Ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.